friends, and welcome to episode 65 of Did You Bring the Hummus podcast. I'm Kimberly, your host, and I'm super excited to be here with you today. Did You Bring the Hummus is a podcast to help you go vegan. Most importantly, we'll talk about how to embrace this meaningful decision with fervor and fun. Episodes post every Monday on your favorite podcast app. Before we get started, I have one very important question for you. Did you bring the hummus? Today, I am joined by Meredith Marine of Vegan Hospitality. Meredith is a vegan entrepreneur with a background in social work and community organizing. She is the founder and CEO of Vegan Hospitality, the largest worldwide professional vegan consultant network and the only company offering vegan hospitality consultant certification. Vegan hospitality consultants help restaurants, resorts, and hospitality groups streamline food service and customer service for their vegan guests with the mission to usher the hospitality industry into the new era of plant-based hospitality. Meredith is known in the vegan community for her work to transform Aruba into the most vegan-friendly island in the Caribbean. Through her vegan hospitality network and her mindfulness coaching framework, Meredith's mission is to bring entrepreneurship opportunities, community organizing strategies, and mindfulness tools to the vegan community to help vegans become more effective activists and entrepreneurs. She currently lives in Aruba with her vegan family of four and virtually coaches and teaches vegans all over the world to make an impact on the hospitality industry. Now, you may remember that both Angelica Williams and Gaz Skirr mentioned being vegan hospitality consultants, so I thought it only made sense to have Meredith's episode come next. From Meredith's vegan journey to the story of how organically her vegan hospitality business came together and everything that came in between, Meredith and I have a fun and open conversation about veganism, activism, and the reason vegan guests at restaurants and hotels have more responsibility than your regular guest. Oh, and she's a really fun take on hummus, too. Hey, Meredith. Thanks for joining me. Welcome.
Thank you for the invitation.
I'm so excited to have this conversation today. We are going to cover so many awesome things.
So funny. I feel like that's how every podcast starts, like across the board, not you, but like in general. It's always like, we're so excited for this conversation. But I feel the same way as a listener. Like I turn on a podcast to relax and just hear something new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's get started with your vegan journey.
Okay. It's a bit of a long story, so feel free to interject if it goes on too long, because I started as a vegetarian almost 20 years ago. So I was 18 in my first year of college, and I started becoming I really went vegetarian overnight because I had this kind of strange experience where I was friendly with a guy who had an experience. He was coming home on the subway in New York City. And he saw a man walking on the subway tracks, and the guy was deaf and like not hearing the train coming. So my friend went over and grabbed his arms and tried to pull him out, but the train hit this guy and the guy flew across the platform. My friend was like invested in this now. So he went to the hospital to find out what happened, and he found out the guy passed away, and he learned more about his story. He was an immigrant from Bangladesh, a migrant worker who came to send money back to his family. So my friend started a charity for this person's family to send money to Bangladesh. And I found out about this story because he just knocked on my dorm room door and told me about it. And then I just felt so compelled to raise money for this cause. So I started emailing everyone I knew and walking door to door in the dorm and trying to get money. And I think I raised like $30, and it felt like, oh, like that's not enough money. $30, what is that? And I started to think, what else can I do? Because I just felt so outraged that it was like injustice, like this innocent life lost for absolutely no reason. And somehow in my brain at that time, I was like, okay, well, what I could do is stop eating animals because I'm also causing innocent loss of life for no reason, three times a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I don't think it was so simple as like that one event caused it, but more so that my brain was just ready for that decision through exploring spirituality at the time, through studying philosophy and taking an ethics course, and also just living out of my house for the first time and being in control of what I was eating myself versus someone else cooking for me. So I went vegetarian overnight, and I wouldn't say I was on a health promoting diet. You know, I was still doing beer and pizza diet like college students can do. I was not healthy. Like I went back to my doctor after 3 years of doing this, back to my home doctor. And he was like, you have high cholesterol. Like you've gained 30 pounds. Like what is going on? And he was like, I'm worried about you. I'm like, well, you know, I'm in college. And he was like, right. No, it's because you're vegetarian. You have to eat meat. You have to go back to eating meat. So I didn't really understand that. My family was worried because of the cholesterol. So I did start to incorporate some meat back into my diet. I think it was like fish or shrimp or something and turkey maybe. Of course, that didn't solve my health issues because we know that that's not how it works. Mm-hmm. So I was on a path toward trying to understand health and nutrition. And around the same time, I met my husband. So this is right after I graduated college, came to Aruba on vacation, met this guy, local guy at a restaurant. He was the maitre d'. And he, we fell in love and he went to study in the Netherlands. So I left my job and traveled to the Netherlands to live with him. And during that time, I had just a very different experience with food and agriculture system. Netherlands is quite amazing as far as agriculture goes. They're one of the biggest exporters, if not the biggest, of like fruits and vegetables. And they're such a small country. So for the fact that they can do that is incredible. And we would bike everywhere. You know, I had just like a different lifestyle. I was getting healthier. I was biking past the farm. So I would see the produce that, you know, we could pick it ourselves. But not only the produce, like we were driving past cows and seeing the cows grazing and like, oh, that's where the milk comes from and the cheese. And, you know, that's where the meat comes from. So during that time, we also started educating ourselves together, watching documentaries, Food Inc., Cowspiracy, all those things, reading books. And the animal ethics journey and the health journey kind of went together. And we both decided to transition for myself back to vegetarianism after about a year of having broken it. And then eventually that led to a vegan transition over the course of, I would say, like 6 or 7 years, really. We were like vegetarian, almost vegan, like on that journey for so long, because we didn't really make a full connection mentally until I gave birth to our first child in 2016. We had our daughter and I was breastfeeding her. And I started to realize that is what we do to cows in the industry. And I'm not the only one in the world who's made that connection. A lot of mothers have made that connection. I think there's a whole community of mothers against dairy milk. It's like an organization, because I was pumping, you know, and realizing that is exactly what happens to cows, but of course on a much bigger scale and a much more traumatic scale, and realizing I don't want to ever do that to anybody else. So in that moment, when I made that connection, I stopped. I just was like, I'm going full on vegan. And it also paired with the exact same time that we moved to Aruba. So that was also 2016, we moved to Aruba. And we were in a culture where it was not so easy to be vegan and not so well understood. So we had to be pretty vocal about our needs. And in order to get them met, we couldn't be confusing people. We couldn't go to a restaurant and be like, I'm only vegan this time, but next time I'm willing to eat dairy. Or go to my mother-in-law's house and be like, oh yeah, okay, put the fish on my plate. We'll just like pretend to eat it. Like we couldn't do that, even though like it felt awkward at the time to take such a hard line. But it was the best thing that we could do for ourselves and for, I think, the people around us too, because setting a clear boundary sometimes makes people feel safer, you know, in any, mm-hmm. for any reason. It makes your relationship better and it helps people understand how to support you. Yeah. So long journey, but I made it. And I think around that same moment when I felt like, okay, I'm fully vegan, that's also when I became an activist, because I started immersing myself in animal ethics. And I see Peter Singer's book behind you.
Yeah.
Love it. He was, I mean, even like in college, you know, my first philosophy course, I majored in philosophy and he was just an idol of mine. I think, yeah, just, being able to know all these things, you want to just talk about it. And so right away, as soon as I was like, I'm fully vegan and I'm not going to shut up about it, now everyone has to hear about it.
That's a great story. And I love when, like, we all come to the same place, right? When we're meeting here on Did You Bring the Hummus, we're all vegan. And even though we've come to the same place, so many of us have very different stories, but you and I have so many parallels. So I went vegetarian overnight. Mine was, I was like 2 months away from my 21st birthday. And I got an issue of PETA's Animal Times in the mail. And I don't know why it came to me, but like you, my brain was just ready for that. And I too majored in philosophy, hence my
interest. I think I heard you say that on another one of your episodes. And yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah.
So it's very rare to meet another philosophy major.
Right. But Peter Singer too had such an impact on me. His was the first book I read after I read the issue of Animal Times. And it took me until 2015 to go vegan. I'd go vegan for a little bit and then, you know, I'd be dating and they didn't understand. So I'd be like, all right, I'll just have pizza tonight. And I was like wavering a lot. But once 2015 came along and I was like, nope, this is what I'm doing. And that's just the end of it. I'm vegan forever. And yeah.
Do you remember the moment when that happened? What was that final decision for you?
I don't know. It was just like a random day. And I was just like, I'm not doing this anymore because I'd spent so much time, you know, here we are. It was like 14 years later from that moment of going vegetarian. And I just knew too much. And all those seeds had been planted over and over and over again. And they were finally sprouting, I guess. And I was like, okay, I'm just doing it. And yeah, that was it. And I told my husband and he's like, okay, you know, he was not vegan yet. It took him a couple more years, but he was on board and, you know, made it a lot easier to have that support for sure.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting how we have so many things in common. I feel like there's probably people out there listening also that have similar stories.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's so many threads like that go across a lot of vegan journeys, like watching certain documentaries or having access to social media or, you know, making some sort of connection like with your personal life. And yeah, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. So you went vegan in Aruba and you were saying how you had to set these boundaries and you had to be really clear. So now there's this thing called vegan Aruba. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. And you know, it happened around the same time because I realized that I needed community in order to do this thing. And I wanted to figure out, am I the only person here that's vegan? How do I connect with other people and show that it is possible to be vegan on Aruba? Because at the time I started telling people I was vegan and they would say to me, wow, that's cool. I would like to be vegan, but I don't think it's possible to be vegan here. The produce is too expensive. It spoils quickly. It's all imported. You know, Aruba is a desert-like climate, so there's not a lot growing here. And the culture is all meat heavy, you know, like you hear from every single culture, right? But every culture thinks they're unique in that situation. But it's just, everyone was telling me it was impossible. So I decided to start an Instagram account to just show people the way I live as a vegan and navigating it and figuring it out. And I wasn't really on Instagram before. Like I didn't really know anything about social media. I wasn't even on Facebook at the time. I just was like, this seems like a good idea. I'm going to post some pictures. And my early Instagram account was so ugly. And you could even scroll back and see, but I was posting pictures of like brown soup and like probably hummus toast was like one of my first posts too. Just like random pictures of the ugliest food. And I'm sure it tasted, but my camera quality was horrible. But people still followed me because they wanted the information. And it was a time when the aesthetic wasn't as important, I guess. So I started to build a community of people that wanted to learn from me and kind of become vegan. So it wasn't really necessarily vegans following me at the time. Mm-hmm. But then I started to also build a community of vegan tourists who were coming to the island because Aruba has, I think, over 1 million tourists a year, you know, way more than the actual population on Aruba. Aruba is a small place. There's only like 150,000 residents. So there were a lot of people who were looking for vegan options on the island and following me because I was also posting about vegan finds like at the supermarket and restaurants. And eventually I moved into advocacy. So not just posting things about, oh, here's where you can find this, but actually tagging a restaurant and saying, you don't have any vegan options, so I can't eat here. What are you going to do about that? Or taking a picture of the pasta marinara that I got at 20 restaurants and saying, is this the best you can do? Like, why don't you make this instead? And starting conversations with people who were in positions of power in the sense where they could actually make a difference in the hospitality scene for vegans. So through that Instagram, I started building connections with people. I was invited to give a workshop at a yoga studio. I did a 5-week series on relationship with food and going vegan. And one thing led to the next. I was eventually invited to give a workshop at National Restaurant Association meeting, where I was able to talk about the difference between vegetarian, vegan, and gluten-free guests and showcase real examples of mislabeled menus. Like, I was literally speaking to people. I was like, here's a picture of your menu. Your labels are wrong. And I didn't know who was going to be in the room when I made the presentation, but I was sitting in front of 25 restaurant owners and chefs, and I was showing them pictures of the things that they had served me that were not correct or mislabeled menus. And at the end of that meeting, they said, well, this is great. You've convinced us. We need to start serving vegan options. We need to relabel our menus, but we don't know how to do that. So can you help us? And I said, what do you mean? This is your job. What do you mean? I have no culinary background. I'm not in hospitality. I actually was a professor at the university at the time teaching social work. I have a master's in social work. So I was teaching like social role of social psychology and social work and advocacy work and community empowerment. And I didn't really understand why these restaurants were asking me for help. And they said, well, it looks like you know your stuff. You know what's vegan. You know how to label menus. You know how to cook. And we really have no idea what to do. So can you help us? So I said, okay. And the next week after that presentation, I was invited to go look at a menu for a Cuban restaurant that was updating their menu. And I looked at his menu. I gave him some ideas. And then he said, okay, great. Can you go to the supermarket, buy the food, bring it back, and teach my chefs how to cook it? Because they've never seen tofu or tempeh before, and they don't know what to do with it. I said, yes. So I did that. And then we said, okay, well, how are the servers going to serve this food if they don't know what it is or how to describe it? So we better train them too. And what about accessing the vegan community and letting them know that these dishes now exist? So they had to print their menu. We did a launch event promotion around it, and it was super successful. And it just gave us this clue that Aruba's ready for vegan options. Aruba's ready to serve the vegan community locally and tourism community, and not just vegans, but tons of people were just really eager to try something new and excited about the idea that they were going to potentially get healthier options, that they were going to get more vegetable heavy options. Because like I said, it can be difficult to find vegetables here mm-hmm. that are fresh and affordable. So then I had a line of restaurants waiting to work with me after that. And I worked through them one by one, you know, restaurants, hotels, and I built a website called Vegan Aruba where I could get, I made a list of vegan friendly restaurants so people looking for things could come and find them. And Happy Cow is great, but it wasn't really updated because there weren't any local ambassadors, and tourists are coming here once a year. So it wasn't like a great place where you can update things. Mm-hmm. Happy Cow requires a lot of people to come and eat at certain places to really keep things fresh. And so I started my own website so that I could actually like make sure there were full on details for every listing. And also, you know, I would check with them, like, are your French fries fried in fish oil? And like, is this really vegan? Let me look at the ingredients. I wouldn't list anything on the website unless I really spoke with the chef myself. And when I started that website in, I think 2017 or 2018, I launched it. It had 10 places on it. And now it has almost 100. We're like, wow. About 100. I think we have 99. And it's amazing. It's truly amazing. The criteria for being on that website is you have to have at least one vegan option on your actual menu. Like, it has to be on the menu. You can't just be like, oh, we'll make you something. And many of the places on the list actually have full vegan menus, because that's what I do. I go out and I work with the restaurants now, and I create vegan menus with them. And you know, I also launched another business out of that. So my main business right now, actually Vegan Aruba is no longer a business. It is a volunteer organization that is run mostly by me. And I continue to do the work in Aruba, and I run my business operations through my business, Vegan Hospitality, which is the more global version of Vegan Aruba, essentially. So the mission is to make the vegan lifestyle accessible and acceptable across the world. So that started in Aruba, and now it is a global movement. And I train vegans to create their own hospitality consulting businesses in their communities so that they can consult and spread this movement. And I also work with my own clients as well to continue to support the hotel industry, the restaurant industry, and really try to make the vegan lifestyle accessible, but also exciting and trendy and I'm not afraid to use the word vegan. And I think that we need to be rebranding the word vegan and making it special and cool and making people want to try these vegan options.
Yes. Yes. I love that. And I hate when people are like, vegan, don't use that word. Don't call me vegan. I'm like, no, we need to, this word is not a bad word.
Right.
Like, you know, there's the whole plant-based community, right? That's like, we're better than you because we only eat whole food, no process, like whatever. And like vegans only eat junk food. And it's like, no.
I know. And it's interesting. Like when I'm training chefs and servers and trying to help them understand the difference between the vegan lifestyle and the plant-based diet and the variations there, because it's very confusing for people in the industry to understand why people are ordering in a certain way. Mm-hmm. People are coming into these restaurants and they're like, sometimes people will order, they'll be like, we're vegan, and they'll order from the vegan menu. And then they'll be like, that dessert on the traditional menu looks better, so I'm going to order that cheesecake. Mm-hmm. And totally confuses the servers and the chefs. And sometimes people are making exceptions because they're on vacation. So you see that a lot in the more of the touristic communities, like, oh, I'm on vacation, so I'm like, you know, not 100% vegan on vacation, those kind of things. And you see it with gluten-free too. It's not just vegan. It's all the dietary requirements. People who don't have severe life-threatening allergies are making exceptions when they feel like it. It's super confusing in the industry. And I wish it was the case, but it is, you know, people have the right to choose what they're going to eat. And so it takes a lot of training to explain that to the hospitality industry.
Mm-hmm. I bet. Yeah. When I think about whenever someone asks me why I'm so precious about the word vegan, that is a huge part of it, because the more people that show up and go, I'll have the vegan entree and the dairy filled dessert, that starts to make people who aren't making the time to learn what that means to go, oh, so vegans actually do just kind of eat everything. They just choose when they're going to do it. And so then when someone who is vegan comes in to a restaurant that doesn't have like very clear guidelines on what their vegan options are, and they ask for something, they're going to be more likely to get a dish that's loaded with cheese or maybe even has like chicken in it, because it just becomes a word that doesn't mean anything. And it's so important that this word continues to mean what it means. And if we expand to include more, I think that's okay. Like we go outside of just the social justice with animals, and we include, you know, that vegans also are concerned about social justice for, you know, humans. That makes sense to me. But to make it where the word vegan could make people think, oh, well, if you eat eggs, like, no, we need to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I think it is really confusing. And, you know, I think I was also part of that. Like, I was calling myself vegan for 6-7 years before I fully committed. And I would say, like, I was 99% plant-based, in the sense that I would eat ice cream once in a blue moon if my friends were going somewhere that there was no vegan option. So I didn't really get it. You know, I think there's all these things in life where you don't really like totally get something until you're like, you make that transition. Yeah. And I don't blame people for that. Like, I don't think it's their fault. I think it's important to train the industry. And so when I train servers and I train chefs, I explain to them, it doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter to them how someone is ordering, and it shouldn't matter to them what other people are putting in their bodies. Or, you know, they don't have to define or ask any questions about why someone's vegan or why they're making that choice, but they do need to be transparent about what they're putting in their food so that the individual who's ordering that food can make the appropriate choice for their own body. Because everybody has that ability to make their own choices. We need to empower the customers to understand what's actually in the food and trust. You know, we need to build trust between the servers and the customers so that when they're asking a question, they're getting the truth and they're not getting a guess or a made up answer.
Yeah. There have been countless times where I've been out with a group. So, you know, maybe I didn't have the ability to choose where we were going, and I express what I need, and a dish comes to me and I'm like, I don't know. Like, are we sure there isn't chicken stock? Are we sure that there's not, I don't know, like, you know, fish in this dish or like in a sauce or something. And I feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And then I've got to pay for that meal, even if, you know, like, so it's, it is so important that the servers and the chefs and the cooks, that they all understand it. So what you're doing is super important, and I'm so glad that there's something like this out there, because it's just going to help us move things forward. And I think it's going to spark interest in people where they see vegan options on a menu, and maybe they've heard the word vegan and they think like, oh, it's healthy, so let me try something new. And then it's really good. And they're like, I'm going to have that again. And it starts to like build this curiosity. And we're like then on our way to maybe creating that vegan world that we want so badly and we need so badly.
Exactly. I think vegan friendly world is the transition to vegan world, and it has to be vegan friendly before it's going to be fully vegan.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we're talking about food, and potentially sometimes there's food that, you know, slips into what we're eating that we wouldn't choose on our own. And that's something that we touched on a little bit, is like this idea of like, what if you accidentally eat something that isn't vegan? Does it make you not vegan anymore? What does it mean? Tell me what your thoughts on that.
Yeah. Okay. So 100%, it doesn't make you not vegan, because vegan is it's a mindset. It's a belief system. It's not, a purity issue. And it certainly has happened to me. I would say more times since I've moved back. So we were living in Florida for a couple of years, in between moving to Aruba, then we left and we came back anyway, but we came back a couple months ago. And when we came back a couple months ago, now I'm full-time family breadwinner and my husband is house dad, which is amazing. I get to build my business, but it means he's doing the shopping more now, as far as I used to do the shopping in Florida, and I used to do it online. So I would just like literally just replicate Whole Foods. Okay. Click. And it was the same order every time. And now he's going into these stores where a lot of the ingredients they're all in different languages, and he speaks four languages, but to read every ingredient label and like all the different brands from different countries, mistakes have been happening, let's just say. And he brought home last week a bag of kerupuk, which is like an Indonesian shrimp chip. And they make a vegan version of it out of cassava. So that's the one that I usually buy. And he, I guess, saw this one and he bought the wrong one. And he's in the other room. I hope he's not hearing me. I'll have to apologize for telling him a story, but he was really convinced that it was vegan. I was like, this is weird. It's like a different brand I've never seen before. It says kerupuk on it. It doesn't say cassava. Is this vegan? He was like, yes, of course. Like it's vegan. You know, it's the vegan one. It's like, okay. So I left it in the cabinet for a couple of weeks. And then the other night I was like, okay, let's taste this and see what it's like. So I tasted it. It's like, that's a different flavor than I was expecting. It's very flavorful. Then I taste another one. And as that second one is in my mouth, I was like, let me just read the ingredients. And I see the word for shrimp in Dutch. And I was just like, shoot, that's gross. And I had a very like visceral reaction. Like I literally went to the sink and spit it out and washed my mouth with mouthwash. And my daughter saw this too. And she's like, what happened? And I was like, I ate shrimp. And my daughter's vegan. Our whole family's vegan. And I was just thinking like, it's kind of strange because shrimp is something I used to actually enjoy eating 20 years ago. And now I have this reaction where it's not food. Like I did not feel like that was food in my mouth, and it felt like it needed to not be in my mouth anymore. And I never questioned, oh, does this make me not vegan or anything like that? But it felt violating. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that is psychological. Like, I think there's a bit of a, like, I don't know that it was so much taste, but psychological, like that's not supposed to be there. Like, I don't want to participate in that. Like, it feels like I was forced in a sense to participate in something I don't believe in. So it's amazing how, you know, when you totally commit to veganism, your whole mindset shifts, and you have to make that mindset shift actually, because otherwise you make all those exceptions. Oh, what's one time? Like, I'll just eat the rest of the, I mean, why would I throw it out? You know, I didn't throw it out. We're going to give it to someone else. But the idea that like one time isn't going to cause harm. You know, I said that for years when I was eating ice cream randomly with my friends. So it's the commitment that makes it feel so violating when that commitment is broken. Yeah. And happens to everyone though. It really does happen to every vegan, whether you know it or not. Like I found out some things about the food industry when I started working as a consultant that like, I'm sure I was eating non-vegan things without knowing for years. There are many restaurants that are making their marinara sauce with chicken stock. No one would think to ask in a pizza, in a pasta dish. No one would think to ask whether that was vegan or vegetarian. There are vegetable soups that are being made with chicken stock. There's rice being made. Chicken stock is everywhere. Potatoes, like people are putting this flavoring in and not saying anything about it on a menu. Looks like a vegan or vegetarian option. So it is happening. And I was telling a chef the other day when I met with him that being vegan isn't about being perfect. It's about reducing harm, doing the best we possibly can. And he understood that, you know, he understood and appreciated that. And I've actually had really positive experiences with chefs in general who appreciate their vegan guests and are excited to be able to serve people that want to reduce harm, that want to have a better planet.
Oh, that's awesome. Going back quickly to this idea of like eating something by accident versus choosing. So I remember there was a colleague of mine who had posted a couple of years ago, she had gone vegan after we had had a bunch of conversations, or she was calling herself vegan. I don't think she actually was vegan. She was still, but she definitely wasn't still vegan. She was buying like leather shoes and handbags and stuff. So she had embraced the meal part of veganism, but she posted one day on Instagram, a picture of a pizza. And she was like, you know, nobody's going to take my vegan card away if I have cheese pizza one time. And so I commented and I went, hi, I'm the vegan person is here to take away your vegan card. Oh, no. And here's why. What's that?
How did that end up?
She totally ignored my point, which was, I love that you're eating vegan food, but this word matters. So call, if you need a label, I would suggest maybe vegetarian, maybe flexitarian, if you like, you know, but to call yourself vegan, like, here's what that means. And I explained the definition of veganism. And then she came back with, what about workers? What about this? Like it became, what about the climate? And I'm like, okay, but you eating cheese pizza is also harming the workers and the climate. So, so yeah, it didn't end well. We're still, friendly-ish online. Like she's not a person I would see in my life anyway now, but yeah, I sat with it though for probably longer than I should have, thinking, do I comment on this? Do I let her know? And, you know, I think I could have handled it differently. I thought coming in with being like, hi, I'm the vegan person who's taken away your vegan card would kind of break the ice, like being funny.
Yeah.
But I guess it wasn't taken that way. But these moments,
if she posted that publicly, you would think it's because she was inviting conversation around it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you would think so. And she had like a ton of followers. So I also was like, you know, you've been talking about veganism since you started eating this way and you have a bunch of followers. Isn't it your responsibility to share accurate information with them? And, you know, well, we see how that's gone over the last few years. Accurate information being available or not. But anyway, that's a whole different conversation. So tell me more about working with chefs and how they react to you. You mentioned that you've had like a pretty positive experience, that people are excited to serve vegans and maybe even get more creative in the kitchen, right?
Absolutely. It's funny because when I'm training other vegans to do this work, one of the biggest fears is chefs aren't going to want to work with me. Chefs don't really want to serve vegans. Chefs have a bias against vegans. Chefs aren't going to take me seriously. And this like fear of talking to chefs about veganism. And I've had mostly the opposite experience. I've had an experience where chefs are eager to learn more, excited about having an opportunity to talk about something that they don't normally encounter in their workplace, and excited to serve guests that they typically are feeling problems around. So the vegan guest, there's this stereotype, oh, the difficult guest, right? The vegan guest is difficult. And anyone with a dietary request that is off menu, I think would be perceived as difficult. And I try to flip that script that, okay, it's not the guest that is difficult. It's that you're not prepared to serve that guest. And that is a difficult thing to do. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like someone came to your dinner party and you weren't prepared to serve them, that would ruin your dinner party. So of course it feels difficult, but it doesn't have to be that way. So when I'm training them, I'm teaching them to be prepared for the vegan guest. And then it feels easy, just like it feels like serving any guest. Yeah. So I was meeting with a chef the other day at a hotel that I'm working with. And this is a young Dutch guy who's been in the industry for less than 10 years, I would say. And he's worked at several restaurants, and none of the restaurants he worked with had vegan options. So he never had a chance to serve vegan guests properly and never had a chance to be creative in the kitchen around this. And now he's a head chef at a hotel that is wellness focused, that has a vegan menu, that that is ready to serve vegan guests better. And so he was super excited to learn more. And the interesting thing is that I went there the other day to do a menu evaluation with him. So to go through their sales data and their current offerings, and to see how we can update them, and to see what, go through everything, like from the kitchen processes to understanding what ingredients they want to maximize, to going through current food trends and, you know, what are people going to enjoy eating. But when I asked him what questions he had for me, the questions were, why did you go vegan? Tell me about what happens to cows in the dairy industry. Is it true they have to stay pregnant? How do they get pregnant? What happens to the baby cows? What I heard they don't give them the milk. So what milk do they give them? All sorts of interesting questions about animal welfare. And it's not necessarily what you would expect that conversation to be about, but I love having those conversations, and I'm very honest. And I think that vegans sometimes feel like, okay, chefs aren't going to care about this because they're profiting off of animals' bodies and their byproducts. And so why would they care to learn about this? But chefs are people too, and they have compassion. And potentially when they got into this industry, it was a different time in their life, a time when they maybe just didn't have that knowledge or awareness of exactly what was going on in animal agriculture, or as far as like health. There are a lot of people that believe that you couldn't even survive on a vegan diet. You couldn't be healthy on a vegan diet. And many of the very highly trained chefs, like the experienced chefs, the one who's been in the industry for 30 years, they went to culinary school a long time ago, in a time when education was very different. They were not teaching anything about veganism at culinary school. And in fact, these days, they're not teaching that much either at most culinary schools. They're teaching a little bit, but it's not comprehensive on plant-based cuisine. It's not teaching them how to make full vegan menus. So yeah, that's something I want to change, by the way. I hope to eventually work with the culinary industry and schools, universities, to change the curriculums, but that takes time. There's a lot of bureaucracy there. Yeah. But yeah, chefs are overall, at least the ones I've worked with, fascinated by this, want to understand their customers better, want things to be easier in their kitchen. They embrace having more ingredients become plant-based by default, so they don't have to make replica this mashed potato with the butter, this one with the vegan butter, this chicken stock, this veggie stock. I mean, that's literally like having two restaurants in one. It's much mm-hmm. easier for them to just veganize a lot of the things that they can, you know, that wouldn't make that much of a difference flavor-wise. And then, you know, be able to cross-utilize those ingredients across a traditional menu, a vegan menu, or, you know, whatever they choose to do design-wise. So I've had all these really wonderful, great experiences. And so when I train vegans, I try to explain those experiences and try to teach people to come at this role with a very positive mindset and expect the chef to be happy to work with you, especially if they've hired you, right? They're paying you right. for your advice, and yeah. they want your advice. They want you to be truthful with them and tell them exactly, you know, what's going on in the industry and why they should serve vegan food and why they should take vegan guests seriously.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if a big part of that fear comes from chefs like Gordon Ramsay, who for so long were like, vegans are stupid, that food is gross, like never going to see that at my restaurant. It was very anti-vegan. And like, he's such a big name in the culinary world. He's got multiple television shows, you know, he's everywhere. And so when someone who's so respected in the industry and so in your face in so many different ways is like, no, this is dumb, like, don't do that, gross. people are like, oh, well, chefs probably do feel that way. But even with him, right, he's come a long way where he's come out and admitted like, hey, I've had some vegan food and I've liked it. And you can find vegan options on his menus. You know, his you've even seen if you watch any of his shows, like there are occasions where someone comes into Hell's Kitchen and they have to prepare a vegan version of his risotto. And like they're prepared to do that. So I wonder if a lot of that fear comes from people like that being so vocal.
Sure. I think leaders in the industry, they support and dictate, you know, what happens in the future of the industry. But I think it's also from the personal experiences as being a vegan customer, feeling like a burden. A lot of times vegans go into these spaces and are made to feel like a burden. They have to ask, they have more of a responsibility as a customer than any other customer has. They have to ask a bunch of questions. They have to then be in a position to trust what they're being told. And then a lot of times that trust is being violated because they receive a dish and there's cheese on it and they're told, oh, it's vegan cheese. And they're like, I don't think it is, you know, right. Should I put it in my mouth? Should I send it back? What's going to happen? Do I have to pay for $3 extra for an avocado when I'm not eating the cheese? Like you feel like there's a constant battle. And that's when I knew I had to really change what I was doing was when I started to feel anxious when I was going out to eat, like those first couple months in Aruba, before I really spoke up for myself, I didn't feel like going out. I felt bad about it. I felt anxious. I felt resentful. I felt like I'm paying for food that wasn't good. I felt like, oh, I don't even know if it's fully vegan. It wasn't a good experience. And the more experiences like that you have as a vegan customer and you don't speak up, you don't have the positive experiences of people apologizing or people saying to you, well, I'm so like, I wish we could serve you better. If you're not empowered to have conversations about how to improve things, you're just consistently going out to eat and feeling attacked or feeling like you have to defend yourself. And it's not a good feeling. So your brain starts to make these assumptions. Well, if they haven't figured out how to serve me yet, then they don't want to, they don't care about me. And it triggers all sorts of stuff from our past of not feeling cared about or feeling neglected or feeling betrayed, or it's all those human feelings, but it's just this moment of, you know, you're out to eat. It's supposed to be a good experience. And then you have the social component of how are the people around me sitting at that table going to be affected by this? Should I bother to speak up? Is it going to affect my relationship with them? Maybe you're on a date, or maybe you're with a family member who's not vegan and they don't understand it. And maybe you don't want to have that fight right then. So it makes sense why there is this bit of a trauma around feeling like a burden or feeling like you don't want to speak up. But yeah, I think the vegans that are able to speak up, they're going to make change. And I do believe that if we can expect the best from people, whether it's chefs or from each other, that we can actually push things toward change. And I've seen it happen and I've been part of it.
Yeah, oh, that's amazing. I love it. I think too, that's why we feel such relief when we're at a vegan restaurant. Have you felt that? I know I have. I just like sit in a vegan restaurant and I just know like if there are 4 things or 400 things on this menu, like I can eat every one of them and I don't have to worry about it. And it just is like,
oh. Yep. Amazing. It's amazing being able to eat whatever you want. Menu. That's why I like to create vegan menus at traditional restaurants, because you get to replicate that feeling of like being at a vegan restaurant, but you're not actually at a vegan restaurant. So you can go out to eat with people that would never go with you to a vegan restaurant. But I think even beyond that, being at a vegan restaurant, you also make this assumption that the ownership has the similar values that you do. So it's not only that you're eating the food that you feel good about, but you're supporting a cause you feel good about. It's almost like, oh, I'm eating all this food. I better buy more. I better buy the brownies. Yes. It's a charity. This is like, just like a donation. I'll just like order everything on the menu because I can just spend all this money at this vegan restaurant. That's how I feel when I'm
right. These calories don't count because it's for a good cause.
It's a totally different experience, right?
Yeah. I was surprised to learn there are a couple of vegan restaurants here in New Jersey that are owned by people who aren't vegan.
That's interesting.
Yeah. One couple, they're vegetarian. My parents went and my mom is vegan. My dad's not. And the owners are around the same age as my parents. So they felt like really comfortable just having a conversation with people that they, you know, had just met. And my mom really loves the food there. So she was just striking up a conversation. And the couple mentioned that they are vegetarian, but their entire menu is vegan. They don't offer, you know, dairy, cheese, or anything even as an option. So I thought that was really fascinating. And I hope to go back. I hope to go there myself and ask more of those questions. Like, why is right. this? Yeah, it's just, it's really interesting. Yeah.
It's really interesting. I've heard that before. We have in our network, a consultant who I trained. She's also a baker, and she has her own bakery in South Africa. And she advertises herself as the first fully vegan bakery owned by a vegan owner. So, you know, implicating that there's other vegan bakeries, but the owners are not vegan.
I wonder what the motivation is. Is it like that hopeful thing? The whole time I was vegetarian, I was like, I'm going to be vegan one day. I knew it was going to happen. I just was putting things in my own way to not make that choice and just do it already. I wonder if it's that. Well, anyway.
Find out. You'll ask them.
Yeah, I definitely will. So what about as a vegan going to a restaurant that isn't a vegan restaurant, how do we deal with the places that aren't taking our requests seriously?
Yeah, I think it's good to start by determining who is it that's not taking the request seriously, because I hear this a lot from vegans, like this question of what can I do? Like, what is in my power to do? And I think oftentimes vegans don't get past just speaking to the server. So they're talking to someone who really has no control over the menu, over what comes out of the kitchen. Really, they can't do anything. And they're just at this roadblock of, is this vegan? Well, I don't know. I think so. It came out of the kitchen, right? Or can you make something vegan? Well, yeah, I guess the chef might be able to make something, or they're like, no, what's the menu is the menu, you know? So I think the best thing to do is to ask to speak with the chef or the manager and have a conversation. But really, a lot of this has to happen before you show up at a restaurant that is not vegan friendly. Because if you're going to a restaurant that you know has nothing vegan on the menu, you're taking a risk. And it's, for me, it was a game changer when I started calling restaurants in advance. And because I was encountering this a lot, because there wasn't anything on menus in Aruba when I first moved here, like literally the only thing for vegans was pasta. And a lot of restaurants didn't even know that the pasta, like a lot of their pastas were vegan, but because pasta is normally vegan, but they didn't even know that. And even the chef I met with last week, he literally asked me, I was like, you could do shrimp linguine, like have a shrimp linguine. I was like, you could do a vegan version of that using the same pasta and using vegan shrimp. And I was like, but is the pasta vegan? I was like, why wouldn't it be? Like, are you making it fresh here with like eggs? No, you're buying it from a store. It's wheat, like wheat. And he didn't know that. And it doesn't say anything bad about him. It just like, that is the industry. Like the chefs are not even being taught what pasta is made out of, what store-bought pasta is made out of. And they don't even look at the ingredients. And a lot of times they're actually getting like bulk, they're ordering bulk ingredients where the labels aren't even there. So he even asked me, like, they have a Just Egg, you know, the liquid Just Egg. And he's like, but what is it made out of? Because I just got a white bottle, like I had a white carton and it has no ingredients label. And the chef is going to take the time to go look that up online. What is this made out of? Like, that's a lot of effort.
Yeah.
That on their own. So it helps to call in advance and let them know you're vegan. Let them know, like, do you know what that means? You know, because they might be like, sure, vegan, we serve vegans. And they really are thinking gluten-free. So if they say on the phone, okay, we serve vegans. You say, great. What do you normally serve them? Because I don't see anything on your menu. And ask them, they say, oh, well, the chef can usually make something. And you say, okay, well, can I speak to the chef? Is the chef available to talk to me about what they would make me? And that's when you can get a better conversation. So they might say, no, the chef's not available. You say, well, let me leave my number and have the chef call me back because I'm making a reservation for Friday and I need to know that I can be served. So do this a couple days in advance, especially if you're traveling, you're making a reservation, you can make in advance, or there's a birthday party and you're stuck going to the steakhouse or something. Call a couple days in advance, give them time. So when I was doing this, I was having conversations with chefs and they would ask me, well, what do you want me to serve you? They didn't know. And I was like, wait, I have to come up with my own meal now. Let me look at your menu and figure out what you can make. And I'd be like, well, they'd be like, well, I have grilled vegetables. Okay. What's the protein? And then I would have to explain, go to the store, buy this tofu. Here's how you cook it. You know, here's what flavor sauces do you have? And eventually I started to get some good meals and I started to take pictures of them and post them on Instagram and tag the chef and encourage other people to comment and say, please put this on your menu. Mm-hmm. And that was like the start of some of my restaurant advocacy, but it took having conversations to get them to take me seriously, because otherwise they're just tossing together a pasta as quick as they can or a grilled vegetable platter, and you're never going back there because the meal was terrible. And so they don't see you again. So why should they take you seriously if you're not a loyal customer who's coming continuously and spending money at their restaurant? You're like a, oh, let me just get through this. Like, let's get through it. And then you can go away now and I don't have to ever see you again. So you have to be kind of persistent and build relationships if you want to be taken seriously, because they need a reason to take you seriously. But I think it can also be a bit challenging if you have allergies. So if you're a vegan and also have food allergies, then that's a whole nother level of being taken seriously. And in that case, it takes communication around all the needs that you might need to get met. So cross-contamination and understanding like how they're prepping the food and how they're serving the food. And I also think those conversations are best had before you actually get to the restaurant, because then you know what to expect and you're not going to be, hopefully you're not going to be surprised with what they're serving you. You can prepare in advance. And same with dessert, like, look, you know, if there's no dessert on their menu, you're not going to get it. And you can tell them in advance, I would love to order dessert. Could you get something for me? And they might be willing to make something for you. And then you can even ask after you eat it, hey, could the chef come out of the kitchen? I'd like to thank them for serving me something vegan. And then that's how you also build that relationship with the chef, where the chef says, oh, vegan customers are kind of nice. Oh, I feel good about serving that vegan customer. The vegan customer was so grateful that I did this, that I went out of my way to make something that wasn't on the menu. Hey, maybe I should just put this on the menu, right? That's how these get made when you start to have the positive interactions.
I've had an experience where my husband and I were ordering in, and he was so concerned that there'd be cheese on my pasta because it had happened before. So he put in the order notes, dairy allergy. Yeah. So the pasta should have been like with a marinara and like tomatoes, broccoli, and spinach. So I got the dish and it was just the marinara. And I've noticed that sometimes when you specify not this, they take away so many other things. It's like,
that might have been prepped with butter. They might have already prepped
the butter.
Right. A lot of times they're prepping components of meals in advance, like hours in advance, so that they can create things a la minute when someone orders it. So you might have things that were prepped and not even maybe with butter, but maybe they use the same gloves to handle that broccoli as they were handling other vegetarian or cheese items, and have the same cutting board. And so once that's been prepped in that way, it can't be utilized. I'm not saying that was the case with that. They could have just made it easy, but it happens where they just have to remove certain things because of the way they were prepared in advance.
Okay. So if that happens, if someone's out at a restaurant and they say, oh, I have a dairy allergy. So then they do take it more seriously, right? So it is like, oh, well, we use gloves where we had touched cheese. And so we're not going to include this. And then the dish comes out and you're like, what the hell is this? Where are all the vegetables I asked for?
Hopefully they should be making new vegetables at the moment with fresh gloves. Like that would make more sense, not to just the vegetables, but I guess it depends how busy they are and how innovative they are in their thinking.
Yeah. So I think it's good for us to remember, like, it's okay to ask questions, and sometimes we're going to be at a place where maybe they're not open to it in the moment, you know, during the rush, things are really crazy in the kitchen and maybe they can't stop and take a moment to think about, what is this person sending their food back for? What are you talking about? You know, but I think as unnerving as that can be sometimes, that those of us who are like, okay with like, all right, we'll just see how this goes. Like to ask the questions and plant those seeds.
Big one for the team.
Yeah.
I mean, I also want to encourage people not to write negative reviews right away, because that deters them from caring about the vegan guest experience and making it better. It's strange, but it's like a human response to feel rejected. When someone's writing a negative review, you feel rejected by them. And you're like, oh, that vegan person rejected me. Well, I guess we're not going to want to serve vegans anymore. So I give three strikes and you're out. Right. I try. And I'm close to it with a restaurant here right now where they advertise this vegan special. Ordered it, paid for it, took it takeout. And I opened up one of the boxes and there's a hard-boiled egg right on top of it. like, what is this? Threw it out. And then we had to call them and be like, okay, there was five boxes. The other four boxes, are those actually fully vegan? Because now I don't trust anything. And they assured us, yes, it is. Yes, it is. Okay, fine. And the food was delicious. So we went there in person to eat there in person a couple of weeks later. And again, ordered like five, it's an Indonesian place, ordered like five dishes and really good. And on the fifth dish on the bottom, like it was like a coconut tofu curry, as in like getting to the bottom, there were three pieces of fish, white fish. And I was like, this is fish. This is not vegetables. Send it back. And the waitress apologized. So sorry. And I said, I'm a consultant. I can train your staff to not have these issues. Let me do that. She said, okay, I'm going to talk to the owner. Went back and forth with her. Oh, the owner is like, doesn't really care. Like, that's interesting. Because what if I was allergic to fish? Like, I could have been in the hospital. So then I see them again, post vegan special Thursdays, like full vegan special. And the picture that they used in their advertisement had an egg on it. It was the hard boiled egg.
Oh no.
So I messaged this woman, because now we're on Instagram together. And I'm like, you realize this restaurant is advertising vegan option, but it's not. And she's like, I know. I already told the owner about it. I saw the advertisement too. And he said, so what? When they order it, we just won't use the egg. We'll just have them order it without the egg. It's like, wow, they're really missing the point. So yeah. I don't know if that's the third strike, but for me, I haven't written anything negative, but what I did is I have them listed on my website because they do have on menu vegan options, but I have a note that says, eat at your own risk. We've had issues here related to food. And also I wouldn't eat there again until they agree to a training. I'm not going to personally eat there because I don't want to have that experience again. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's a restaurant that doesn't take things seriously. So I've had a very small handful of those kind of experiences with restaurants. And I think if you're going to be at the point where you're going to write a negative review, it's because you've totally given up on them and you're never going to go there again. And you want to actually deter people from going there because you know, they don't take it seriously so badly that they won't care if someone gets hurt or someone gets the wrong meal, and you really want people to not go there. But mm-hmm. in any other case, if you feel like there's potential for change, you feel like they need to make some changes, you don't want to deter people from going there. You actually want people to go there and be more vocal about it and have these experiences so that they can learn from them. So it's like the fine line, and everyone has to find out what their boundary is. But for me, it's usually the third time or the third mistake, or if I hear very clearly, like we don't care about mm-hmm. this.
Yeah. I think here's where things like Facebook groups that are vegan specific and local can be really helpful, because I know that in the local vegan groups I'm in, someone will post like that something like that happened. They had, an animal product in what they were told was a vegan dish, and they like are bashing the place. And a lot of people will say, hey, you don't need to come here and say this. Like, why don't you tell us what happened? And encourage us to call there and be like, hey, I'm coming and this is what I'm looking for. Are you able to accommodate me? Or I heard this happened and I'd like to make sure that my meal is vegan. And so people will kind of come together and they'll be like, all right, this place has the potential to offer really awesome vegan options. What if we all just started asking for that? So instead of like, bashing a restaurant, not giving them a chance, like, connect with your local vegans and be like, we can change this here. Let's let them know that we matter and that we want this, and then see how they react. And if they do go, no, thanks, that's too much work, then go ahead and leave that negative review or go back to the group and bash them a little bit more.
Right. But giving them a chance. I agree with you.
Yeah. Meredith, this has been an amazing conversation. So I was right at the start that it was going to be awesome.
Yes, I love it. It's fun to get into the details. I feel like we got into a lot of detail.
Yeah. I've got one more question for you. Okay. Share your favorite hummus or your favorite way to eat hummus.
So Kimberly, I ate hummus this morning for breakfast in preparation for this interview, as I woke up with hummus on my mind. And actually I made it fresh yesterday. So I've been making butter bean hummus. Have you ever had butter bean hummus?
No.
It's like the new trend. if it's not, it will be after this episode.
That's so right.
Butter beans are lima beans and they're like very creamy. And when you blend them, instead of, it's just the same hummus recipe you would make, but instead of chickpea using the lima beans, it is so super creamy and you don't get that like, you know, like some people think you need to take off the chickpea skin to make hummus, but for this, you absolutely don't need to do anything because the butter beans are so creamy already that you just blend everything up and it's just like this silky spread. So I had that for breakfast with some tomato on top and some sea salt and so good. So that's my new thing. But I also love making colorful hummus, like beet hummus is really fun.
So pretty.
Yeah, I got back into making hummus. I fall into like patterns of store-bought hummus, homemade hummus, and I forget for like years at a time that I can make my own hummus in 5 seconds. And it's a really strange phenomenon, but especially when I live in the US, it's cheap and easy to buy hummus. And then when I moved back to Aruba, I was like, oh my gosh, hummus is like $6. I'm not going to buy that. I can make it myself. So I started making it myself again. And I'm loving using the butter beans now. I think I'm going to keep doing that and maybe experiment with other things. I also saw a recipe for red lentil hummus. I don't know if you ever tried that.
No.
Just cook the red lentils and then blend them. Yeah, this, you can put anything in. As long as you have the tahini, you can put anything and it comes up tasting like hummus. So that's so my next recipe to try.
Awesome. I am going to try those two as well. As anytime I've made hummus, because I still haven't found that it comes out really great every time I make it, it's very hit or miss when I do that. I'm still like working out with the chickpeas. I haven't expanded beyond that just yet, but I'm going to now.
Yeah. Well, butter beans is going to be a revelation for you because it's so easy, easy to get that texture right. I mean, you literally just like pop them out of the can and rinse them and put them in. So
that sounds good to me.
Let me know how it goes.
I will for sure. Meredith, thank you so, so much for joining me today.
Of course. Thank you for this conversation. I'm excited to share it.
Welcome back. Do you feel more empowered than ever to ask for exactly what you need next time you're dining out? Are you a vegan who's excited to explore Meredith's hospitality consultant program? Meredith offers rolling admissions. Check out her website in the show notes for more information on how to apply. To connect with Meredith, visit her websites, veganhospitality.com and veganaruba.com. Find her on LinkedIn at Meredith Marine and Instagram at vegan.hospitality and Meredith Marine. And then on Facebook and YouTube at Vegan Hospitality. Links, of course, are in the show notes. I hope you found this episode helpful and inspiring. Please subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you're loving it, please give Did You Bring the Hummus a 5-star rating and leave a review. It's an easy way to keep supporting the show. Be sure to share these episodes with your friends. If you're finding something good here, they will too. If you're a vegan or know a vegan who would be a great fit for the podcast, follow the Be a Guest link in the show notes, fill out the quiz, and I'll be in touch. I also have a freebie up on my website. Sign up for my mailing list and get a PDF of 3 amazing vegan recipes. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Did You Bring the Hummus, and visit my website, didyoubringthehummus.com, for more information about me, updates on what I'm working on, new podcast episodes, and all things vegan. Finally, I would love to hear from you. What do you need help with? Is there a topic you want to hear covered on a future episode? DM me on Instagram or send me an email at didyoubringthehummus@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.